Support for this podcast comes from the UTSA Institute of Texan Cultures. For more than 50 years, the museum has told stories of Texas history and heritage from diverse cultures that define the state's unique character. Details at texancultures.com.
This is The Source on Texas Public Radio, 89.1 FM. I'm David Martin Davies. When most people heard that there was a global pandemic, their first thought was, how do we protect ourselves and others? But then there are those, and their first thought was, how do I turn this into a scam opportunity to make money off the desperate people who are looking for hope and some answers in this terrible time? From snake oil cures to IRS pretenders, what scams do you need to be aware of? What can you do to protect yourself or loved ones from becoming a victim of fraud? Who's most at risk? And in times of fear and uncertainty, people are particularly susceptible to believing, sharing, and even acting on false information. Later on, we're going to be talking about how misleading statements about COVID-19 are also leading to attacks on Americans of Asian descent. But what are you seeing out there from scammers? Has your email inbox been infected from con artists? Are you seeing robocalls offering you fake cures, bogus tests, or even some PPE equipment that's going to be pretty shoddy if you get it at all? So you can call in. The number is 833-877-8255 or 833-TPR-TALK, 833-877-8255. You can email us at thesource@tpr.org, tweet at us at tprsource. We're joined for this half hour by John Bash, the U.S. Attorney for the Western District of Texas. Mr. Bash, John Bash, welcome to The Source.
Thanks, David. Thanks for having me on.
Also with us is Jevin West, Associate Professor in the Information School and Director of the Center for an Informed Public at the University of Washington. He's the co-author of a forthcoming book called Calling BS, or he doesn't say BS, he has the word, The Art of Skepticism in a Data-Driven World. And Jevin West, welcome to The Source.
Thanks for having me.
So, John Bash, U.S. Attorney, Western District of Texas. You are looking at these scams right now. What are you seeing?
Well, it's really, I guess I shouldn't be surprised, but I still am a little bit on just the sheer proliferation of scams out there playing on people's fears, legitimate fears about the virus. We're seeing, for example, treatment scams where people are selling fake cures, fake vaccines, and they're trying to get either people's money or their personal information that they can exploit. We're seeing people sell supplies that are real supplies, masks, but they're not going to actually deliver those masks. They're just going to take people's money or personal information. We're seeing people pretending to be doctors or hospitals that have treated a friend of the victim and are demanding payment for that treatment. We're seeing scams pretending to be charities to raise money for victims. Phishing scams, that's with a PH, where people pretend to be the World Health Organization or the CDC to get people's personal information. And it goes on from there. At the U.S. Attorney's Office, we're always fighting different kinds of fraudulent scams. And in some ways, these scams are similar to what we call elder fraud, where they're targeting vulnerable people online or over the phone. But it's really kind of amazing how much these scams have proliferated in so short a period of time.
It does seem like there's no lack of imagination when it comes to people concocting these scams, but they're all terrible. But the worst of the worst has got to be the ones that will impact people's health.
Well, that's right. I mean, fortunately, a lot of the ones selling fake cures or fake vaccines don't actually deliver anything to the person. But I do worry about scams if there do arise scams where they actually deliver something that is either itself dangerous or gives the person the illusion that they're now immune from the disease, and then they go out and they violate all the rules that are in place on social distancing and so forth. So that's pretty scary. I mean, so far, most of what we're seeing is just trying to get people's money or personal information. It's not actually delivering them anything at the end of the day, but that potential is definitely there, and it's something we need to look out for.
Well, are we talking $20 here, $50 there, or are we talking about a lot of money from individuals?
Well, I'll just give you the one example, which is 2 weeks ago, a week and a half ago, our office actually did the first enforcement action by any DOJ component in the country against the COVID scam. And it was a website selling a fake vaccine. I don't think anything was actually ultimately going to be delivered, but it was $4.95 to get the fake vaccine supposedly from the WHO. So it's That's a small amount of money, but of course, once they have your credit card information or your personal information, they can exploit that in ways beyond the $5. But we're also seeing nationwide things like investment scams, where there's supposedly some startup company that's going to develop a cure, that has already developed a cure or treatment, and they're asking for investment. And, you know, we work investment scams all the time, even before the coronavirus arose, and those can often be quite a lot of money. And I wouldn't be surprised if the investment scams with the coronavirus twist will be similar to that.
Do you want people to call you, the U.S. Attorney's Office, with reports of suspected COVID-19 fraud?
Well, they certainly can do that, or their local FBI or their local police. But let me just give you the number, and maybe I'll repeat it a couple times over the course of the broadcast. This is the number everybody nationwide is being told to call on anything having to do with coronavirus crimes. That could be scams. That could be someone trying to weaponize coronavirus by purposely coughing on people, anything. It's the National Center for Disaster Fraud Hotline, and the number is 1-866-720-5721. And you can also email disaster@leo.gov. So either of those things, you can report anything that way, and it'll get to the right law enforcement agency.
That number again is 1-866-720-5721 and disaster
yes.
at leo, L-E-O, dot gov. And
exactly.
How cheesed off are you about this? How serious are you going to take this?
Well, I mean, you know, anytime people are defrauding vulnerable people, it's horrible, but there's, I think probably all your listeners feel it too. There's just something particularly galling about trying to create a scam out of a public health pandemic where you have thousands of people dying, many more than that gravely ill, and something that's shutting down our economy and is affecting people all over the world. To use that to make money off of people who are scared is just, there's something particularly galling about that, I'd say, and I think probably most people would feel that way.
Jevin West, Associate Professor of Information School and Director of the Center for an Informed Public. Is there something about pandemics and mass disaster like this that makes people more vulnerable to misinformation than before?
Absolutely. And I'm just so happy to hear, you know, people like John out there kind of fighting this misinformation, because it is sort of the lowest, you know, it's the very base of awful things you can do during this kind of pandemic. But yeah, these sorts of situations, these crises, they create these knowledge vacuums. And people during that time worry about themselves, they worry about their friends and family, and they hear something that might be inside information to a quick cure or a quick improvement to their situation. And we're all vulnerable to this. We track in our new center these rumors as they travel around social media. We have over, you know, 200 million tweets that we've been tracking since January 24th. And you can see these messages and memes and solutions sort of rise even on social media, where, you know, you have a diverse population on social media, but they'll move. For example, there was a viral tweet and also a viral message that was going around saying that there are a set of things you can do to see whether you have COVID. And of course, you know, there's no way to do that other than a test. But this was supposedly coming from a Stanford study, which was not true either.
Right. And this information is hurtful to the public. It puts them in jeopardy. It diverts funds away from legitimate charities. So we're going to be talking about that when we come back from the break. We do want to hear from you. The number is 833-TPR-TALK, 833-877-8255. This is The Source on Texas Public Radio. We're going to be back in 1 minute. Welcome back to The Source on Texas Public Radio, 89.1 FM. I'm David Martin Davies. Have you noticed misinformation, a flood of it, in your social media feed all about the pandemic? Have you seen friends and family sharing damaging false information? How do you handle that? How are you receiving scam calls related to COVID-19? Are you worried about anyone who gets these things and doesn't know any better and they are susceptible, they fork over their money, which they could actually be using to protect themselves and to be stocking up for what's going to be coming next? You can call in with your observations, what you think we ought to be doing. How are you seeing your family react to this? 833-TPR-TALK. Let's go to Tom on the phones. And Tom, welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Hi, thanks for taking my call, and thanks for the topic today. It's excellent. Brief comment, I hope that you or one of your panelists that you're going to have on today can address one particular scammer or snake oil salesman in particular, and that's, of course, Alex Jones. I know that he is marketing a product under a veiled promise for something regarding or some solution regarding COVID-19. Of course, he has a long history of touting questionable products on his podcast. I'll be happy to listen off the air. Thank you.
Thanks for calling in, Tom. John Bash, U.S. Attorney for the Western District of Texas. Alex Jones, he is no stranger to law enforcement, and I think this is another one.
Well, David, you know, as a U.S. attorney, we would almost never talk about an individual citizen who's not himself or herself facing federal charges. We usually speak through our indictments or speak through filings in court. And I'm not going to violate that rule here by talking about any individual person, whether the person you mentioned or anybody else. But I will say, you know, as I said before, hawking cures, and I'm not sure if that's what's happening in this case at all. I know nothing about the facts of what the listener mentioned, but hawking cures or vaccines, there is no cure. There is no vaccine. So anybody pitching you a cure or a vaccine is not telling the truth about what they're selling. I can guarantee listeners, if anyone actually develops a cure or a vaccine for this disease, that's going to be front page of every newspaper. That's going to be the number one thing on all three cable news networks for a week. And that person's going to make money from that, not by texting or emailing individual people, but by distributing it worldwide. So you're going to know about it if there's a cure or a vaccine. So if you're out there and you're being, and anyone is reaching out to you trying to sell you a treatment or a cure or a vaccine, it's almost assuredly false. And what you should do is log on to the news and see, well, has a vaccine or a cure been discovered for this disease? If not, you should walk away from that offer.
Alex Jones is offering on his website supplements, also a toothpaste that he says can provide protection against the coronavirus. He has received a letter from the New York Attorney General threatening legal action if he didn't cease and desist these promotions. But these are individuals that are very skilled, and they know how to take advantage of individuals' healthy skepticism at times and then weaponize that. Jevin West, how does that work? And I mean, skepticism is a good thing, but that we can be turned into something terrible.
Yeah, I mean, skepticism in a lot of events like this can be good. I mean, not all rumors are bad, but in the case of Alex Jones, because your user asked about this individual, I mean, at least I can state the things that we see posted online. A lot of his claims are around antivirals and, you know, improving the immune system. But as John mentioned, there is no cure for this, and there's no vaccine out there right now. And one of the questions we always force our students to think about when we talk about combating misinformation, three things: who's telling me this, how do they know it, and what do they have to gain from it? So aside from Alex Jones, any sort of person providing these kinds of claims and arguments, just ask, you know, what does this person have to gain from it? What makes them an expert? Are they a doctor, or are they a, you know, leading public health official? These are the kinds of things that you can ask of anyone. And if the answers to those questions aren't so strong, then you might want to question that source.
John Bash, U.S. Attorney for the Western District of Texas. We are told that we will be getting checks from the federal government to help families get through the economic downturn that's coming with the COVID-19. When we hear that people are going to be getting checks, then people are going to say, how do I procure that check from someone else? So do we have to take steps to be aware that maybe there are people in our family, older people, who are very vulnerable to this?
Absolutely. I mean, just even before the coronavirus pandemic, benefits fraud in all sorts of different shapes and forms is a big area of our white collar practice. So you have a lot of money now coming from the federal government to a lot of people, and that creates the potential for fraud. I mean, it could be people pretending to be someone they're not, identity theft, in order to get those checks coming to them that really go to somebody else. It could be someone just stealing cash from elderly or vulnerable people who don't completely understand what's going on. So we are on the lookout for that. We know with these benefits coming, not only to individuals, but to hospitals and small businesses, that is just a ripe opportunity for fraud because there's so much money at stake. And we're going to be vigilant on that too.
Now, fake charities, that's also something to be on the lookout for. John Bash, how can people be – they want to give. Of course they want to give right now. These are tough times, and there are charities out there doing really good work. How do you make sure that you're going to be giving your money to someplace that's going to actually benefit others?
Well, let me give just a couple of tips on that. One, much better to do a pre-existing charity you were familiar with, not something that just happened to pop up after this scam. The American Red Cross, of course, I'm not endorsing any charity. I don't do that. But for example, the American Red Cross or other established charities that everyone is aware of, you know that that's not a scam as long as you're at the right website and it's actually the right charity. Two, be very careful, especially when you're getting unsolicited emails that look like they're from a charity you recognize, to look at the URL, the website address, because a lot of times these things make it look like it's the right address, but actually there's one letter off. And so it's trying to fool people into thinking, for example, it's the American Red Cross when actually it's something different, it's a scam. So the best bet is not to respond to unsolicited requests, even if you think it's from a charity you know. Instead, if you get the idea, maybe from an email, maybe from a friend, I want to donate to X charity that I'm familiar with, you know, use Google and go to their actual website yourself. Don't respond to somebody emailing or texting you something. It's much more likely if you Google one of the established charities and go to that website that you're going to find the right one, because Google tends to have the right website up first when you Google the right name. And that's the way to give to charity. So two things, beware of new charities you've never heard of and beware of unsolicited emails that purport to be from charities that you've heard of, because those can both be scams.
And John Bash, U.S. attorney, how many of these are offshore? Are they out of a reach of the long arm of U.S. law?
Well, you know, we don't have anything like a comprehensive understanding of what all these coronavirus scams look like. What I can tell you is that just our general scams, for example, scams targeting elderly people, often are based offshore. We are doing a massive case right now in San Antonio involving a number of people, most of whom were outside the United States, targeting veterans benefits. A lot of our elder abuse scams involve foreign nationals, but they're not really outside the long arm of our law. In many cases, we extradite the people to the United States. So we have means of combating those scams. But it does make it harder, no doubt, when someone is not actually in the United States. And I have no doubt that a lot of these scams originate abroad.
We got a tweet from John. If this preying on people during times of crisis wreaks so much havoc, why doesn't the federal government pass legislation to prevent or hinder it? John Bash, why does this happen?
Well, you know, there are a whole lot of fraud laws that we already have on the books. So the ones we're most likely to use are the mail fraud and wire fraud statutes. State governments have a variety of state law fraud. There's also a lot of specialized statutes related, for example, medical benefits. So we do have a lot of tools in the toolbox. Now, of course, state legislatures and Congress are always considering a balance between fighting back against fraud and measures that would disrupt legitimate commerce or infringe people's rights. And so there's a balance to be struck there. But we do have a lot of tools in our toolbox to combat fraud. A lot of times it's more of a resource issue than a, like, not having the tools issue. There's just a lot of fraud out there and there's limited governmental resources to fight back against it.
Right. We have laws against robocalling, but it still happens. The reason why these people are doing this, despite the fact that there are laws in place, is because they're criminals.
That's absolutely right. I mean, you know, we've had laws against murder for probably since time immemorial, but they're still murders. So we have to do our best as a law enforcement community to fight back against these. It really, especially with these scams, it takes citizen involvement. That's why it's so important that if you see something online, even if there's no way you would ever fall for it, there's someone out there that might fall for it. And so report to the number I gave before, 1-866-720-5721, because although you're not fooled, you might be saving someone else from getting fooled.
And John Bash, you mentioned earlier one of these scams. Guy says, I'm with the World Health Organization. Can you send us $5? And you say, $5, what's the harm in that? I'll do that. Even if you you could be starting grooming is part of the process. It starts off with $5, and they can groom you to start giving more and more. Is that a concern?
Well, that's one concern. You know, another concern is even if they never come back to you, if on that form where you submit the $5, you've submitted your credit card number, you've submitted your name and address and phone number, sophisticated scammers can do all sorts of stuff with that information. They can get into your bank account with that information. So that's actually the biggest threat. And some of these scams are just trying to get the personal information. They don't care about the $5. They care about the personal information because that enables them to do real damage to the person down the road.
Attorney General William Barr has directed U.S. attorneys across the nation to prioritize the investigation and prosecution of coronavirus fraud schemes. And I'm sure you're following those directives. What can we expect to see coming from your office?
Well, as I said, we had the first enforcement action in the country. We have a really amazing AUSA kind of leading our effort, although we have a lot of other prosecutors helping him. His name's Mike Galdo. He's in Austin. He was our elder fraud, still is our elder fraud coordinator, but he's kind of just an amazing prosecutor on scams. You can expect us to attack all three buckets that the Attorney General has identified. So one is what we've been talking about, scams. Two is hoarding and price gouging. HHS last week designated a number of medical supplies as scarce, including those N95 masks and gowns and so forth, ventilators. And so if anyone's hoarding those or price gouging on those, that's actually a federal crime now that HHS has designated them as scarce. So we're going to be going after that if we see it. And then the last thing is terrorism related to COVID-19, which is to say weaponizing COVID to do harm. And that may take the form of a very sophisticated terrorist group like an ISIS, but I think more likely it's going to take the form of, for example, a local white supremacist going into an area with a lot of minority citizens and trying to cough on them, and either that he has COVID or he's pretending to have COVID to terrorize them. And we're going to go after that hard, too. We think we have federal statutes that can address that. So all three of those buckets, fraud, hoarding, and terrorism, we're going to be full throttle on that at DOJ.
Well, some of these scammers might be thinking that the U.S. Attorney General's office or your office here is brought to your knees with the pandemic. Y'all are sick, too, and you can't really get to these things. How are y'all doing? Are y'all working from home? How are you operating during the pandemic?
Yeah, we're doing great. I mean, we're at full force. We have almost everybody in our workforce working from home. Luckily, it's not good at all that this thing hit, but at least it hit at a time when we have the technological capacity to have a lot of people working from home. We have the absolute minimum number of people coming in who need to be in to do certain essential functions for the office. And, of course, we have AUSAs going to court when they need to go to court, although a lot of proceedings have been postponed. But law enforcement's not going to be postponed at all. I mean, we're still doing everything we normally do in terms of criminal prosecution. And as I said, we've really approached COVID fraud and other COVID issues in a proactive way. So criminals shouldn't be under the misimpression that we're not going to be doing law enforcement. That would be totally wrong.
Government offices will not be emailing people asking for individuals' personal information. That's basically given. A lot of people don't know that. They're hearing they're going to get phishing emails saying, give us your information so we can send you your check. People need to know, don't reply to those. Ignore those. Hang up on robocalls. Ignore all the phishing attempts. Is that pretty much the way to go?
That's the way to go. And if you think it's something legitimate that might be legitimate, for example, the DMV emails you and says we want your information, don't respond to that email. Don't click on anything. Definitely don't download anything in that email because that can be malware that infects your computer with a computer virus. Instead, go to the website or call the DMV and say, hey, I got this. Is this legit? And that's the better way to do it. Independently verify who's sending you the information. Don't respond to these unsolicited emails and texts. Don't click on anything.
Right. And a computer virus, now we have malware attempts where they hijack your computers. And that's just another terrible thing to watch out for. So don't click on anything that you aren't very confident in. I need to let John Bash go, U.S. Attorney for Western District of Texas. It was really great to have you on. Hope to have you back again sometime. We're going to keep Jevin West for the next segment as we talk about how this misinformation is targeting many Americans of Asian descent. You can call in. The number is 833-TPR-TALK. This is The Source on Texas Public Radio. Back after this.
I'm Steve Short, a host of All Things Considered on Texas Public Radio. Our news team is dedicated to providing important, accurate information in this difficult time. It's the financial support from listeners like you that helps provide the resources needed to report these stories. Become a member now, or if you're a sustaining member, consider increasing your monthly contribution. Support real, reliable radio at tpr.org. Thank you.
Welcome back to The Source on Texas Public Radio, 89.1 FM. I'm David Martin Davies. We're continuing our conversation about misinformation. Not always is it going to be targeting your pocketbook. It's just going to be trying to weaponize people's suspicions or even just hate that we have in our society. And we're seeing that there are many Americans of Asian descent have feel like they have been who have been targeted for attacks in public because of what people have been saying about the coronavirus. And how can we back away from that and dial that down and let people have some real information about what's happening? The number is 833-TPR-TALK. Have you seen this? Let us know, 833-877-8255. You can also email us at thesource@tpr.org. Cheryl Drazen joins us, Vice President of the Anti-Defamation League Central Division. And Cheryl Drazen, welcome to The Source.
Thank you. It's nice to be here. Thank you for having me.
And Jevin West continues with us this half hour. And Jevin, stick in there. I'm going to be leaning on you pretty heavy in just a second. But Cheryl, let me ask you about what you're seeing about the connections people are trying to make here between the coronavirus and Americans of Asian descent.
Absolutely. Amid the growing threat of the coronavirus, there are surging reports of xenophobic and racist incidents targeting members of the Asian American and Pacific Islander community in the U.S. The ADL Center on Extremism has been tracking these incidents, and as of the end of last week, so I'm giving you March 25th numbers, we had tracked 45 incidents, reports of individuals being threatened or harassed on the street, whether they were being told to go back to China, being blamed for bringing the virus to the U.S., racial slurs, spit on, physically assaulted, you name it. There are various permutations that we're seeing, but all based on xenophobia and stereotyping.
There are people who are insisting on calling the coronavirus the Chinese virus or stuff. Why, Cheryl, is that inaccurate, harmful, hateful?
Well, first of all, words matter. Anytime public officials misname the virus using Chinese virus, I've heard the Wuhan virus, I've heard the Kung flu, and they describe it by a presumed country of origin rather than its scientific name, it fuels stereotyping, scapegoating, and xenophobia. Elected officials, whether they are your local city council member or national leadership, need to be responsible and to stop attempting to politicize the virus through misnomers. It won't help solve the problem. It only stokes confusion, and it leads to stereotyping and hate crimes against minority groups.
But Cheryl, I've heard this response to that argument saying we had the Spanish flu in 1918. Was that racist?
I've heard that too. What I can tell you is the use of rhetoric like that is irresponsible, and we know that it leads to scapegoating and fear-mongering. And at times of crisis like this, and this time is like none other that we've seen, minorities tend to pay the price for the rhetoric. There's a serious risk that this kind of rhetoric will take on a life of its own, and that the hate will be as viral as what we're trying to fight medically. We know from history that in times of real crisis, the voices of reason and logic can be drowned out by people who want to spread hate. Hate is very easy to spread. You don't need 6 feet of distancing. You don't need a lot of Germex. It's super, super easy to spread.
Sure. It seems like when we had the Spanish flu in 1918, we didn't have a lot of capacity in science. We really didn't have the ability to identify viruses and be able to say this is a coronavirus and it's, you know, basically a ball of RNA and all this other kind of stuff. We didn't have that type of science at that time. People were still basically going on folklore. Now we have that. Being able to rely on saying it was the Spanish flu, people didn't know, we needed to call it something, that's one thing. But today, in this day and age of science, we don't need to do that.
Absolutely. Absolutely. You know, ADL has done a tremendous amount of research on anti-Semitism, and Jews have been directly blamed for the spread of disease for ages. The bubonic plague in the 14th century is probably the best example of that, when Jews were accused of literally poisoning the wells. And we're even seeing at a far less rate than what we're seeing in the Asian American communities. Orthodox Jewish communities, particularly in the Northeast, being demonized and attacked in relation to to the COVID-19 breakout. Last summer, we saw it with respect to a measles breakout. And we're aware of what the impact of that is going to be. And the disease is not being transmitted by any one religious or ethnic group. We know that. The data bears it. According to scientists, it can be spread by anybody coming into contact with someone who's already been infected.
One more knuckleheaded thing I've heard people say about this. They say, well, I call Chinese food. People call is calling Chinese food Chinese food. Is that racist?
I've heard that one as well. And I think we have to go by what the medical professionals are calling. We have the CDC. We have the World Health Organization who have provided guidance on the virus and referred to it as COVID-19 or the novel coronavirus. And I think that the other arguments about Chinese food, or I've heard Chinese jump rope, we just have to categorize them differently.
Yeah, they're two different things. It's not the same intent. And we also have to go into, like, what are you trying to say? Why don't you want to call it what by its actual name? Why would you go out of your way to adopt this anti-Asian bias in the discussion of something that involves public health? It seems like destructive and hateful and purposeful in doing that. Jevin West, you're the associate professor at the Information School, director of the Center for an Informed Public at the University of Washington, co-author of the forthcoming book, Calling BS, The Art of Skepticism in a Data-Driven World. How do you see this use of language, Chinese virus, in talking about coronavirus?
Well, this virus doesn't have borders. Actually, my training is in biology, and one of the we never in our biology books, when we're looking at the protein structure around a cell or we're looking at how these viral particles attach to human cells, we're never referring to its origin. And I think in this situation, these government leaders more than ever need to come together. We can fight about economics and trade wars and all, not to say that that's all that productive possibly either, but I think when it comes to this particular pandemic, it doesn't have any productive means about it. I don't see anything useful that comes from it. And these viral particles don't care a darn for these borders. So let's work on this together.
So clearly, President Trump has called it the Chinese virus. He has gone out of his way to call it the Chinese virus. There's even been a photograph of one of his talking points where he scratched out coronavirus and put in Chinese in there. And this hurts America because China, they have a better acquaintance with how to deal with this coronavirus. And also, they have a lot of material that we should be asking them for help and not trying to antagonize them. Cheryl Drazen, what are your thoughts?
I think you've hit the nail on the head. When we look at this through the lens of hate crimes, and in Midland, March 14th, a Burmese man and his son were attacked and stabbed at a Sam's Club. And that the FBI announced yesterday they would be pursuing the prosecution as a hate crime. There are two victims. There's the immediate victim of the attack, and there's the community for whom the messaging was sent. And that is always why in fighting a hate crime, you're fighting both the criminal element, but also the messaging to community. And we have to be hyper aware that whether it is whether it's the optics of the speech with COVID marked out and Chinese virus written in, or whether it is whether it's language or pictures, that we are messaging to a much broader audience, and the impact is dramatically larger than the one person or two people who are the victim of any of these 45 acts that I mentioned before. We are absolutely amplifying that message, whether you want to call it a dog whistle or not, but we are indicating to people that this is an okay way to deal with the stress of this, terribly, terribly difficult situation that we're experiencing as a globe, not even just as a country right now.
Jevin West, a little different question here. There's now a thing called coronavirus truthers. They're working with the hashtag #FilmYourHospital. They're claiming that the coronavirus is a hoax, and they're going to hospitals wanting to be shown where there are is a war zone type conditions, and they're saying that this is all baloney. Have you seen this, and what does that mean right now?
Well, I'm aware of these kinds of efforts, but we're sort of drowned out in the world of hoax hashtags and hoax sort of movements online. So I'm not, I mean, I don't know that one in particular. We're kind of aware of some of these, but I think, you know, it's typical of these crises. We've been studying in our center for more than a decade, the people that work in it, crises, from one crisis to the next. And this one's, you know, different in terms of its volume, but what's most damaging is when you see these kinds of efforts mixed with things that are somewhat true. So, I mean, if you look at some of the, some of the discussions around chloroquine, for example, where people will talk about the, you know, drinking that. Well, it led to someone actually drinking and believing it and dying. And so the sort of journalistic efforts to go around and sort of look at hospitals, I think is not as scary to me as, I mean, it's certainly pretty upsetting that there's this effort going on, but I think it's when it deals with people's health that really scares us.
We're taking a look at some of the misinformation that is flying around the internet right now about the coronavirus. Some people claiming it's a hoax or that the numbers are made up. Some people are trying to use this as an opportunity to spread hate and racism against Americans of Asian descent. What are you seeing in your area? Have you heard these racist, xenophobic remarks, maybe from your own friends and family? How have you handled it? Are you an American of Asian descent? Do you fear for your safety because of this misinformation related to COVID-19. How do you feel about your political officials calling it by its wrong name? Call in. The number is 833-TPR-TALK, 833-877-8255. The Source continues after this break. Welcome back to The Source on Texas Public Radio, 89.1 FM. I'm David Martin Davies. We're talking about the spread of misinformation. Misinformation spreads like a virus. It's viral. Right now, it does harm, and as we deal with the coronavirus pandemic. You can call in with your questions and comments. The number is 833-877-8255. We got an email from Renee. What role does the media play in spreading misinformation simply by covering what comes directly from Trump but isn't true? Do journalists have an obligation to cover what he and others say if it's unproven or flat out wrong? So, Jevin West, can you sort of talk about how that rolls out when the leader of the United States, the president, is on TV live giving us an update about coronavirus, and he says things that are absolutely 100% false?
Yeah, so that one hits pretty close to home. So we're in Seattle here, and our local NPR station, KUOW, recently tweeted out that they weren't going to cover live White House briefings anymore because they couldn't fact check fast enough, essentially. They were still going to, of course, report on what was said news surrounding, you know, the discussions in the White House, but they couldn't do it live anymore because they couldn't fact check in time. So that sort of gives you an indication of sort of the frustration that I think journalists have with this. Now, of course, there was a lot of pushback with that particular tweet because KUOW, like yourself, is publicly funded. And so there was, there was definitely pushback that they should be covering it. But I think the signal that came ringing loud and clear is basically what your listener was saying, which is there are things coming out of the White House that are inconsistent, that are sometimes just plain wrong. And that is concerning, especially when listeners are hoping to have reliable information, which is why a lot of them are relying on their local governments more than even the federal government.
Cheryl Drazen, what are your thoughts?
I think Renee makes a great point, and I think while journalists definitely have a role to play in framing this response and being able to get that initial information out, the tropes are dangerous, and we all have an opportunity to stand up and reject them, whether it's when we see the stories being passed along in a social media feed, whether it's a letter to the editor, whether it's calling in to a show, and to really take not a passive, but an active role in rejecting attempts to blame any one race or ethnic group for this virus. And I think it does require, I know there are no sports going on right now, but it requires being on offense, not just on defense.
We got an email from Sergio. My mother received a photo message from her friends that claims the National Guard is being dispatched and to make sure you have 2 weeks food supply because President Trump is going to announce a 2-week shutdown soon. That, okay, right there is we don't know that's going to happen and it's highly doubtful. So is such an obvious hoax scam? Where can we get accurate news updates from the president and the governor other than TPR and NPR, of course? So I don't, you know, no one knows what's going to be happening tomorrow. We don't even know what's going to be happening by sunset today. But Jevin West, people are scared.
Yeah. So, Dave, that's a really good example. So Washington, because it was one of the first epicenters in the United States, we've seen some of these hoaxes travel amongst our communities. And now we're seeing it in the those same exact rumors floating around in other states as well. And that one was pretty common, where I personally received text messages from friends of friends that claimed that martial law was going to be implemented. I know a friend in Eastern Washington who works for the police department. They're going to start closing I-5 and I-90. These sorts of things are going around in our text messages, even more so than we've seen in the past. And that sort of hits really close personally. And so I imagine we're going to see that exact one that you just mentioned in other states, because we saw it for some time. So what do we do as consumers of information? I think we do need to then rely more on our public health departments, our governors, our public health officials that are sort of saying what's real. And so many of the governors have actually squashed that particular hoax and say, first of all, martial law means a certain something specific. And no, we're not going to be doing that anytime soon. We will let you know well in advance.
Cheryl Drazen, Vice President of the Anti-Defamation League Central Division. Typically, when the Anti-Defamation League looks out for false information all the time, have you seen a surge in that?
We have definitely seen a surge in misinformation. We've also seen a surge in, and we touched on it before, in extremist spreading misinformation. And so some of the misinformation I truly believe that's going on out there is a game of telephone, that someone sees something, they pass it along, and it snowballs into what we saw, you know, a month ago of everybody needs toilet paper tonight, like go get it right this second. That didn't come from a bad place at all. But I think we also have to recognize that there is intentional spreading of misinformation, particularly from our vantage point within the extremist community who historically seize on moments of national or international crisis to push conspiracy theories and advocate for violence. And they're using the same techniques to do that. And so dividing between what is misinformation and what is intentional misinformation, I think, is a really difficult chore for people.
So, Jevin West, do you see bad actors out there connected to rogue nations who are active right now on social media pushing destructive misinformation, looking to erode trust in our institutions, in the government, calling this pandemic a hoax, definitely doing all they can to weaken our America?
Absolutely. I mean, we're seeing that in large volumes, but it's not atypical. We see this in many of the previous crises that we've been going through. And in this form of misinformation, this intentional misinformation, something we study, it's called disinformation. And this disinformation, the campaigns that are being employed right now don't even necessarily care which way it pushes the public, you know, whether it's that it is a hoax or it's not. It's just a lot of times just trying to sow confusion, to erode that trust in institutions, as you mentioned, Dave. But it also tries to put almost a fire hose of information, of contradictory information out there. So at some point, the idea is just to get consumers just to not trust anything. So, you know, everything is contradictory. I can't trust anything, can't trust my government, can't trust universities, can't trust doctors. If you can't trust anything, that sort of plays into exactly what a lot of these information campaigners are sort of looking for. But that's a little bit different than people that are just being opportunists and trying to make money from it. But certainly the ones that are pushing these disinformation campaigns from foreign, you know, foreign outlets. That's part of their strategy.
Cheryl Drazen, what is the Anti-Defamation League recommending that people do?
We're recommending that people report these as soon as they see them. Tracking them and being able to figure out where the story starts and how it emerges allows the opportunity to work with some of the social media platforms to remove some of the information.
Do you want people who actually have to deal with the anti-Asian bias that's happening right now, or the confrontations, the attacks, they need to report that?
They need to report it. They absolutely need to report it. There is sometimes a perception that I would argue is a misperception that, you know, sticks and stones can break my bones and words will never hurt me. And so if you just hear something and somebody's not physically harmed by it, maybe you let it go. I think we're in a situation where we can't play the game that way, because we know that those words lead to actions. And I think we just have to be vigilant and report and respond when it's appropriate. I mean, if it's a social media feed that you're engaged in the discussion, it's hard. It's really, really hard to stand up to someone you know or kind of sort of know in a Facebook friends kind of way and call them out. But I think we have to do it the very same way that we have to stand 6 feet apart or only leave the house for essentials.
Jevin West, what do you think people ought to be doing right now? I mean, it seems crazy that people fall for the same things over and over again. We saw it during the last presidential election, and we're probably going to see it again. Is this some sort of human nature flaw that we just can't really compensate for?
Well, I think it is. And actually, one thing that we talk about is that it's a problem from K1 to K99. We're all susceptible to it. Even those that actually try to study it and to do research on it, including myself, we're all susceptible to these misinformation, especially during times when there's uncertainty and there's these knowledge vacuums. So I think, you know, one of the things that we can do is look to those trusted sources. And sometimes those trusted sources can make mistakes too, but I would recommend going to the World Health Organization much faster than you would go to maybe a friend's post on Facebook. Go to the CDC, go to the NIH, go to your public health officials, your local ones. I think they become a filter for you, and they have the same sort of incentives that you do, especially at the local level. So I think it's trusting in those reliable sources more so than any rumor that you might find on Facebook or Twitter.
Rumors right now are so powerful, Jevin. That's just hard to ignore.
Yeah, I mean, this is where rumors really gain a lot of traction. And I will say sometimes, you know, those rumors can come true, but more often those rumors are things like Cheryl mentioned, like the game of telephone, start with honest intent that, you know, people concerned about their family and friends, and somehow it morphs into drinking fish, you know, cleaning liquid or something. And I think that's the parts that we're really scared, or leading to, you know, the defamation of certain groups because of the way we label the crises. I think there's all sorts of things that can happen in negative ways. But I think, you know, I'm sort of an optimist on this. I think, you know, people are smart enough to recognize when something is not true, as long as they're willing to put some of the work in and do some sourcing and do what journalists like yourself do all the time.
Jevin West is the associate professor in the Information School and the director of the Center for an Informed Public at the University of Washington. He's the co-author of the book Calling BS, The Art of Skepticism in a Data-Driven World. Also, Cheryl Drazen is with us. Thank you so much, Cheryl, Vice President of the Anti-Defamation League Central Division. This is The Source on Texas Public Radio. I'm David Martin Davies. Thanks for tuning us in.
This has been The Source on Texas Public Radio. The Source is hosted by David Martin Davies, produced by Kim Johnson and Dallas Williams, with production assistance provided by me, Ruben Garcia. Dan Katz is TPR's news director. Support for The Source comes from contributors to the Community Engagement Fund, including the Gladys and Ralph Lazarus Foundation.